ABC News, I'm Mark Remillard. Powerful rains coming down on the Burning Man Festival in northern Nevada, prompting many to leave or shelter in place. Authorities have closed the gate to get into Burning Man for the remainder of the event. Las Vegas also seeing flooding. President Biden pledging federal support for residents of Florida impacted by Hurricane Idalia. Biden surveyed the damage during a tour of the hard-hit city of Live Oak on Saturday. Florida resident Amy Firestone says many people lost their homes.
It's a great community. Everybody helps each other and wants to help each other, and we want to rebuild. We want Cedar Key back.
Thousands of customers remain without power. Drone strikes ahead of a meeting between Turkey's president and Russia's president. The two leaders are set to meet Monday as Turkey aims to broker a deal to restart food shipments from Ukraine through the Black Sea. But ahead of that, Russia unleashing a barrage of drone strikes in the port region of Odessa. At least two people hospitalized. This is ABC News. A popular YouTube mom, Ruby Frankie, now facing six felony counts of aggravated child abuse after one of her children reportedly crawled out of a window and asked a neighbor for help.
For the first time, we're hearing emergency responders as they see one of Ruby Frankie's children after he allegedly escaped through a window.
The male does have duct tape around each ankle. He's not telling the RP why, and said that there's sores around his wrists and ankles. The RP is becoming emotional regarding the child's health.
Arrest documents saying the child escaped to a neighbor's home. The 12-year-old child described by that neighbor in a phone call to police as emaciated and malnourished with open wounds.
ABC's Zorin Shaw. The search continues in Pennsylvania for a missing inmate who authorities say escaped from a prison in Chester County last week. Danilo Cavalcante was sentenced to life in prison just last month. Authorities say he was spotted Saturday morning, just 2 miles from the prison. Mark Remillard, ABC News.
Working hard is a long-standing tradition in Wisconsin. Some of the first labor unions formed here because of it. This Labor Day, join Earl Ingram as he hosts a special The Earl Ingram Show, live from 8 to 11 a.m. at Labor Fest in Milwaukee.
Many people don't work on Labor Day, and so all they know is it's a day off. As a person who spent 34 years in labor and was a union man, I know the value of that.
Earl and his guests will discuss how Wisconsin's labor-related legislation became a model for other states, along with what unions look like now.
I've seen us go from that 30% union membership to now in Wisconsin, somewhere around 12%.
A union-led parade meets up with festgoers on the Summerfest grounds at 11. Labor Fest is free and open to all. Join Earl Ingram live this Labor Day, Monday, September 4th, starting at 8 a.m. from Labor Fest in Milwaukee, only here on your local Civic Media radio station and the Civic Media app.
Missed your favorite show? It's easy to find it wherever you listen to podcasts. Apple, Google, or civicmedia.us.
For Civic Media News, I'm Terry Bell. At least 32,000 kids in Wisconsin have lost health insurance coverage under Medicaid since May. Mike Mohn takes a look at the reasons why.
States are redetermining people's eligibility after pandemic rules officially ended in May. The temporary provision automatically kept recipients enrolled, but now that it's expired, many children are being dropped from the rolls as their families lose coverage. William Park Sutherland of the Wisconsin-based policy group Kids Forward says it's bad timing with a new school year here.
Kids that have stable access to health insurance are more likely to do better in school. They're more likely to be employed as adults. They're less likely to visit the emergency room.
He says even if parents no longer think they're eligible because of a boost in their household income, there's a good chance their kids still qualify, with the income limits being different for children. Joan Elker with the Georgetown University Center for Children and Families says it's worrisome that many of the Medicaid losses aren't because the state determined someone isn't eligible.
We're in this unprecedented historic situation where states that are generally understaffed have to process eligibility checks for everybody on the program, and that includes half the children in the country. So this is a massive undertaking.
National estimates have shown that 3 out of 4 children who lose Medicaid coverage are likely still eligible. Policy experts say there are common reasons why families have a hard time keeping up with their enrollment. That includes renewal letters being sent to an old address after a recent move, or transportation and technology barriers, especially in rural areas. Mike Moen, Wisconsin News Connection.
And this is Civic Media News. I'm Terry Bell.
My name is Teresa Barber. I was in the United States Navy, and I served overseas in the Middle East and Africa. Early on in my career, I had a commander that taught our suicide prevention training, and the very next day, he took his own life. 90% of suicide attempts involving a gun are fatal. My way of continuing my service is to help protect my community by being a responsible gun owner and by storing firearms safely. Store all your guns securely. Help stop suicide.
Brought to you by End Family Fire and the Ad Council.
Most of us are not just red or blue. We're kind of purple. We want to do what's right while protecting our individual freedoms.
Join the Rational Revolution with hosts Chris Elfheim and Emily Sefos Thursday evenings from 7 to 8 on WGBW, WISS, and the Civic Media app.
This is Busted Pencils, fully leaded education talk on Devil Radio 92.7. Now, here are your hosts, Dr. Tim Slecker and Dr. Johnny Lupinacci. Educated educators talking education.
Oh, it is Tim, not Johnny. Busted Pencils, fully leaded education talk, educated educators talking education. Johnny Lupinacci tonight, since we talk about education, he's got the kind of back to school night thing with his daughter. So Anya, we said, we'll give him a little time off tonight. So Johnny, if you're out there, please don't embarrass your daughters in front of their teachers. It's the worst thing that could ever happen to them. Oh, what a great show, though, we have lined up here today. Our guest, though, and before I introduce her, we were just talking before the show came on. How do we talk about the state of public education? And it's a depressing thing to talk about. And we said, we're not depressing people, but this concept is out there, and like the attacks are relentless. She wrote the book 10 years ago, Losing America's Schools, The Fight to Reclaim Public Education. You can go to her blog, nancybailey.com, to check out her latest kind of a reflection 10 years later, the continuing intentional unraveling of American public schools. Welcome back to Busted Pencils, Nancy Bailey. Nancy, how are you?
I'm pretty good. I wished I had better news and wished things had changed for the better in 10 years. You know, it's hard to look back, and as a writer, I go to write something and realize I've already written about it. You know, how many times can you say play is important for young children? And how many times can you say children need recess and that they don't need to be tested so much and that they need the arts and so on and so forth? I think we all just keep trying to keep the right messages out there and hope for change. You just have to have some hope.
Well, I mean, so is that it? You know, as much as we say it's depressing, we look 10 years, you know, 10 years, you wrote the book 10 years later, you're still making, you said the comment, you know, hey, recess, kids, they go together. Is there hope, though, too? Because it's like reminding people, though, that 10 years later, you know, we haven't made a lot of movement on this. But how do we then potentially, and, you know, we're going to go into the issues that you bring up in your blog at nancybailey.com. But, you know, just thinking between, you know, you and I here, wonder what you think about, I mean, what keeps you positive when you have to write things like this 10 years after you wrote a book called Losing America's Public Schools?
Well, I think our public schools are a very important democratic institution for the nation. And as a teacher, I am so sorry that in all the years that I can remember, we haven't evolved to becoming the greatest system in the world. I mean, instead, it seems like Americans have done nothing but break down this institution and make it sound like it was failed. And Now, I think when you look at schools, what's very sad to me is that I think they've succeeded in a lot of ways. I mean, I can understand when parents say, I want to remove my child from this school because they don't have the arts, because they are overtested, because they don't get good reading programs, because they don't get all these things that they should get. And the people who've wanted to privatize schools have essentially ruined the schools. And so, you know, people keep fighting for them, and there are still some very good public schools, I'm sure. But it's primarily, I think, the poor kids that get the brunt of it. And I just see a lot of divisiveness. And I sort of think we can see that in society, don't we?
I think so. Yeah.
This breakup of who we are because everybody's going in their different direction. And public schools, to me, one of the best things about them when they're working well is that they should be able to bring people together. Mm. And when I was teaching in the 80s, for example, I started teaching in a primarily African-American school, and it was integrated. We did bring a wealthier part of the community into the school, and we worked to make everything work together, and we did a good job of that. And I don't see that happening now. I just see people going in different directions, charter schools wanting to let public funds go towards vouchers and to tax and to private schools. And for me, that's just a real loss for the nation and for bringing us together.
Yeah, I wonder. Well, on that that concept of bringing us together. Although, in fact, bringing us together. If you're out there, 844-967-2789, 844-967-2789, you can call us. Our guest is Nancy Bailey, nancybailey.com, her blog, 10 Years Later, The Continuing Intentional Unraveling of America's Public Schools. We're talking about that. But, you know, and before we got into it, I said, Nancy, how do we stay hopeful in this? And you kind of, though, and this maybe isn't hope, but you reminded me the intentionality of the public schools of bringing people together. You know, we talked to Carol Burris last week. We've had Diane Ravitch on the show. Isn't that, though, potentially one of the reasons why we see the attack is the realization that a thriving American public school system is a uniting message around democracy, and the fear of a fully functioning public school system is really at the heart of, as you say, the intentional unraveling. I mean, at this point now, and you're saying 10 years, you know, we had James Harvey on, who was part of the original commission to write A Nation at Risk 40 years ago, right? You know, and think about that. So the intentional unraveling, it's the intentional because of the fear of what public education represents about what's possible.
That's exactly right. And I think a lot, at least for me, and at my age, I remember A Nation at Risk as really starting this false narrative that our schools were failing and that we have American workers that aren't doing well because of the schools. And we've heard this for 40 years, so people buy it. And, you know, it never was true to begin with. Mm-hmm. And yet, if you keep hearing that narrative over and over again, people start to believe that it's true. And I see that with so many things. In 2014, I wrote one of the best posts, one of the most popular posts anyway, that I think I've ever written about setting children up to hate reading. And the post ended up with something like 91,000 likes because parents didn't like the idea of having very young children being pushed to read too early. And Facebook kind of removes some of the likes. They've done some strange things with likes lately. I think they want you to pay for them or something. But and it's still several thousand the last I looked. But I've reposted that post, and parents now have come to believe that kindergarten is where children should really learn to read, and that they should be reading before first grade. And they don't see this post as relevant as it was in 2014. So that's really troubling to me, not so much about the post, but just that there's been this change, this change of the belief system, that we have to push our children harder and faster at an earlier level. And I see that even with preschool now, where parents have come to believe that if their children aren't at the beginning stages of reading, that they really are deficient. And that is such a concern for me. And parents will argue, oh, but that isn't a concern for us. We have to have our kids reading soon. Right. And you know, you got to understand why parents feel like that. If their child isn't reading well by third grade, they will fail. Many of these states use retention to fail their kid. And that's right. Devastating for a lot of children. And, you know, that's, I think, where we're at, though.
Yeah, you think about the, that overachievement, just pushing this, you know, down, though, and pushing down the achievement. You say there's nothing in developmental research, psychological research, that would disagree with what you put out. It's not Nancy Bailey's opinion that pushing 3- and 4-year-olds to be readers is, you know, inappropriate and, in fact, developmentally and maybe even socially harmful, because at 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 56, play is still really, really important. In fact, constructive, really awesome, well put together kind of exploratory play. In fact, better playgrounds out there. Say, investing in play, if you really were concerned about reading achievement, we'd be investing in early childhood. And if we were investing in early childhood, we wouldn't be investing in phonics spelling card or phonics flashcards for three-year-olds. We'd be investing in, you know, some safe outdoor adventures for the kids to do. It's Busted Pencils, fully leaded education talk, educated educators talking education. The number's 844-967-2789. Our guest is Dr. Nancy Bailey. We're looking at her post 10 years later, the continuing intentional, keyword there, intentional unraveling of America's public schools. You can find this at nancybailey.com. When we get back, though, Nancy, you know, we're going to come up here on the break. We're going to get into the post, because 10 years later, you lay out a massive list of things that we need to be concerned about. Oh, my goodness. I'll just kind of try to name them off here before we go, and then we'll come back to them. Arts assessment, class size, Common Core, corporations and politicians, COVID data, diversity, expectations, media, parents, reading, retention, school boards, school choice, school facilities, school libraries, special education, students, teachers, technology, workforce. Those are all them Busted Pencils, fully led at education talk. Education educators, or E square, or E, yeah, E to the cube. Back in a minute.
We're in the Civic Media Truth Booth at the Brown County Fair. We asked, and here's what you are telling us about living in the Green Bay area, attending the fair, and more.
Novalee Phelps. I work at the fair at Sheridan Amusements. I work with the kiddie rides. I set up, tear down, wash them, and run them, make little kids happy. I run the raceway. I set it up, tear it down. I help with other kiddie rides. I love putting smile on kids' faces.
Thanks for sharing your story. Listen for more on the Talk of Green Bay, WGBW 97.9 FM, 1590 AM, and Oshkosh Air Support, WISS 1100 AM, 98.3 FM, and the Civic Media app. And our website, civicmedia.us, and search for Truth Booth. And watch for the Civic Media Truth Booth coming to your town soon.
Why are interscholastic sports called the last classroom of the day? Because they teach students important life lessons like teamwork, accountability, and perseverance. School sports are so much more than a game. They're about developing the whole person. That's why they're an essential part of every student's education.
Encourage your student to participate in the last classroom of the day. Interscholastic sports in Wisconsin. This message presented by the WIAA and the Wisconsin Athletic Directors Association.
Do you ever get tired of one-sided conversations? Have you changed the station due to mean-spirited rhetoric? Wouldn't it be refreshing to listen and engage in civilized dialogue about politics and how issues affect our families differently? Welcome to the Rational Revolution. I'm Chris Elfheim.
And I'm Emily Sefos. Together, we'll look at today's issues through a politically purple lens. So join us on Thursday evenings from 7 to 8 on WGBW, WISS, and the Civic Media app.
Looking for more local programming? Check out our website, civicmedia.us, to see our entire lineup.
Busted Pencils, fully leaded education talk, educated educators talking education, not E squared, Tim, E cubed. I know, I tried to blame that on Anya last time. It wasn't Anya's fault. It's Tim. Tim's always screwing that up. 844-967-2789. We are talking to Dr. Nancy Bailey. We are looking at her post at nancybailey.com 10 years later, the continuing intentional unraveling of America's public schools. Nancy, okay, I went through that long list. We're going to do our best. Let's maybe try two at a time. So what's your concern with arts and assessment?
Well, first of all, every child should have a good art program. Arts aren't frills. Art is very important for the arts' sake. And assessment, of course, has been harmful for how many years? You were part of the opt-out movement, so you know how it helps. And that's not getting any better. In fact, it's worse because it's online and they can data mine, right? And so that's really troubling.
You know what? Talk about that, though, for a second, because you jumped to that one, data and assessment, data collection. You know, how many parents realize what you just said? The fact is, taking the online assessments and the data, give it a little bit of an explanation about what point you're making there. What happens when a student takes an online assessment?
Well, I think that's the question parents should ask. Who gets access to this data? The FERPA laws and COPPA haven't, I know they've been working on it, but they still, I don't think, protect a child's data like they should. I think some of these programs have rules that you can look up, but there's always they're not always real clear. Mm-hmm. And President Biden, I thought it was interesting in his last State of the Union address, did mention the data that was being collected on kids. But I mean, in Virginia, for example, the data quality campaign, the governor, Youngkin, hired someone to head education who had been working with the data quality campaign, was not an educator, you know, did not work in the classroom. So what does that tell you? Data is incredibly important. They want to collect data. They wanted to collect it for years. I think it's in, it's just very much a part of our schooling now. And that's part of why they want to privatize schools as well, so they can collect data and track kids for the workforce, which is, I think, very concerning. So, you know, parents, I don't think do question this, and they should ask questions. And
they should be asking questions about that, but for some reason we keep moving them to be, you know, asking questions about whether or not there is a cat litter in the bathroom or something
right?
Something crazy. Okay, we're going to try this. So I got a little note from Anya, but Mark has called in. Mark, we're going to see, Mark, if we can hear you. Mark, what's going on?
Yeah, can you hear me?
Yeah, we got you for a second. Go for it.
Great. Yeah, it just is amazing to me that they're trying to cut back on the stuff that makes education valuable to a lot of kids, arts and athletics, and as well as the practical skills, because what is life without aesthetic enjoyment? And apparently that we started here, especially in the state of Wisconsin, when Roy Walker wanted to get rid of the Wisconsin idea, where their idea apparently is just to have little cogs for the workforce rather than active participating members in all aspects of society.
Well, yeah, Mark, thank you. I'm glad we got that in. But Nancy, sounds like Mark has been reading your post.
Oh, well, that's good.
But I mean, linking the workforce and recognizing, you know, the aesthetics. You know what? Talk about that, because there is a lot of, you know, kind of like, hey, we are preparing people for the workforce. In fact, even earlier this year, Secretary Cardona kind of pointed out the most important thing public schools are doing are preparing workforce. And sometimes if you push against that, people are going, well, we're all preparing people for the workforce, Tim and Nancy. What do you have against that?
Well, I think as educators and as parents, when we talk about the workforce, we think about our children growing up and sort of self-actualizing what it is they want to do, how they want to use the skills that they learn in school to be able to find the career that they enjoy, even a career that they feel passionate about. But as I know exactly what you're talking about with Education Secretary Cardona's, he did a tweet on Twitter where he was talking more about aligning students to industry. And it really stirred everybody up, because that's not how we look at children. We don't look at kids for, you know, how they're going to fit the need for corporations. We look at children for how they're going to grow up and find the jobs that they self-actualize and want to do. And so I think you saw in that tweet a real bumping of ideas when it comes to workforce and schooling. And that, I think, has been a huge part of the privatization push in our country for years.
I think the way you said that, too, is just for people to recognize it's not that we're saying, of course, education doesn't prepare kids to get a job.
Right.
But the idea that kids are there exclusively to take their place for corporations, that's what we're up against. It's 844-967-2789. It's Busted Pencils. It is E Cubed and more with Nancy Bailey when we get back after the break.
Broadcasting from the City Deck Studios on North Washington Street, the talk of Green Bay, 1590 AM and 97.9 FM WGBW.
ABC News, I'm Mark Remillard. Powerful rains coming down on the Burning Man Festival in northern Nevada, prompting many to leave or shelter in place. Authorities have closed the gate to get into Burning Man for the remainder of the event. Las Vegas also seeing flooding. President Biden pledging federal support for residents of Florida impacted by Hurricane Idalia. Biden surveyed the damage during a tour of the hard-hit city of Live Oak on Saturday. Florida resident Amy Firestone says many people lost their homes.
It's a great community. Everybody helps each other and wants to help each other, and we want to rebuild. We want Cedar Key back.
Thousands of customers remain without power. Drone strikes ahead of a meeting between Turkey's president and Russia's president. The two leaders are set to meet Monday as Turkey aims to broker a deal to restart food shipments from Ukraine through the Black Sea. But ahead of that, Russia unleashing a barrage of drone strikes in the port region of Odessa. At least two people hospitalized. This is ABC News.
Uh-oh, Brad's buzzed.
Oh, yeah?
Yeah, he's starting with the woots. And now a speech.
I just want to say that friendship is about heart. Heart and brain. Who's with me?
Good thing is, he knows when he's buzzed.
And my brain is saying, when it's time to go home, somebody call me a ride.
Love that guy.
Me too.
Know your buzzed warning signs? Call for a ride when it's time to go home. Buzz driving is drunk driving. A message from NHTSA and the Ad Council.
Working hard is a long-standing tradition in Wisconsin. Some of the first labor unions formed here because of it. This Labor Day, join Earl Ingram as he hosts a special The Earl Ingram Show live from 8 to 11 a.m. at Labor Fest in Milwaukee.
Many people don't work on Labor Day, and so all they know is it's a day off. As a person who spent 34 years in labor and was a union man, I know the value of that.
Earl and his guests will discuss how Wisconsin's labor related legislation became a model for other states, along with what unions look like now.
I've seen us go from that 30% union membership to now in Wisconsin, somewhere around 12%.
A union-led parade meets up with festgoers on the Summerfest grounds at 11. Laborfest is free and open to all. Join Earl Ingram live this Labor Day, Monday, September 4th, starting at 8 a.m. from Laborfest in Milwaukee, only here on your local Civic Media radio station and the Civic Media app. We're in the Civic Media Truth Booth at the Brown County Fair. We asked, and here's what you are telling us about living in the Green Bay area, attending the fair, and more.
Novalee Phelps. I work at the fair Sheridan Amusements. I work with the kiddie rides. I set up, tear down, wash them, and run them, make little kids happy. I run the raceway. I set it up, tear it down. I help with other kiddie rides. I love putting a smile on kids' faces.
Thanks for sharing your story. Listen for more on the Talk of Green Bay, WGBW 97.9 FM, 1590 AM, and Oshkosh Air Support, WISS 1100 AM, 98.3 FM, and the Civic Media app. And our website, civicmedia.us, and search for Truth Booth. And watch for the Civic Media Truth Booth coming to your town soon.
If you love them enough to listen to them practice the same song on tuba,
please be done.
Over and over and over and over and over, then surely you'll check nhtsa.gov/the right seat to make sure they're correctly buckled in the back seat.
Sounds good, honey.
Check today at nhtsa.gov/the right seat. Brought to you by the National Highway Traffic Safety Administration and the Ad Council.
If you want some nice flowers, come to my house. I'm not going to tell you where that is. Busted Pencils, Fully Leaded Education Talk. Educated educators talking education. Johnny Lupinacci off tonight doing the thing you're supposed to do with his daughters at back to school night. Our guest is Dr. Nancy Bailey. We are talking about her blog, 10 Years Later, The Continuing Intentional Unraveling of America's Public Schools. Numbers 844-967-2789, 844-967-2789. If you want to call, join in. She's got a long list of things, so I would recommend going to the blog and seeing them. Nancy, we were hitting some of them, but during the break, we kind of got into a little bit because we mentioned during the last part of the show, Secretary Cardona's tweet about education, public education, workforce alignment, and how that really dissed some people. And I made the comment to you, though. I don't really think Secretary Cardona, President Biden, and so for all of those of you who are on the other, quote, other side, you think that all we do is ever criticize the right. I don't think that Biden, Cardona, the Obama, Duncan Democrats, they didn't see anything wrong with that tweet, because I don't think if we said, why don't you run on public schools are the cornerstone of democracy? I don't know that they would, because I think that frightens them too, because the idea of, you know, giving education to the masses as a public good that liberates people to freedom and democracy, I'm not sure Biden, Cardona Democrats would want that either.
Well, it's hard to tell. I mean, President Obama had the Gates Foundation really ensconced in the DOE. So, I mean, I think that there's just a lot of corporate involvement and corporate push for what they want out of schools, which I think started even with A Nation at Risk. There was really never any president, was there, after President Reagan that pushed back on
We said it's been 40 years of Democrats, Republicans combined together, you know, marching, you know, at this anti-progressive education, anti-democratic public education. You know, if Democrats get control, it was just turned into more of a, you know, we'll give you more money for hyperachievement, but we're still going to really look at public schools not as a way of promoting freedom, public democracy, civic responsibility, acceptance, the bringing together, all those things. In fact, that is one of your other, you point out corporations and politicians. It hasn't changed. It hasn't changed.
It really hasn't. One thing I'd like to mention is the very sorry state of affairs that's taking place in Houston right now with the Houston Independent School District. They have a new superintendent who's not an educator that I know of, and who apparently has worked with the Broad Foundation, which we know how that goes. It's kind of about breaking up schools, right? And, you know, he started by, you know, closing the libraries for some of the poorest schools there and turning them into disciplinary centers. And, you know, that's another real serious issue, I find, is the closing of school libraries in our nation. What does that tell you? And when people say we need to have kids learning how to read, I mean, there's research that shows when children have good libraries, they are usually better at reading. Who would think?
There you go again. We're citing research. My goodness.
Exactly.
Who would, you know, I point that one out to a lot of people. It's like the idea of literally, you know, particularly early childhood, you know, the number of books, and Dolly Parton, we've talked about her work to really get, you know, books in people's houses. People are like, Tim, what are books going to do if the kids can't read them? It's like, you know what? The research is clear. The more books just physically around kids, the better their reading achievement is. It's like,
exactly.
You know, like, it's like, you know, this isn't, again, this isn't Slecker, Bailey, Lupinacci. This isn't our opinion. It just says this. And so you're sitting there going, and yeah, now to do away with libraries in Houston public schools and turn them into detention or kind of discipline centers.
It's for the poor.
For the poor, right. And it's like, who? That's the other question, is to say, when a library, and some of these things, as you said, arts, class size, whenever these things go in the wrong direction, I think that's the first thing to ask is whose kids are suffering from this? Because most of the time, it's not mine and your kids, Nancy, or your grandkids, or you know, Anya's future relatives and kids or anything like that, or any of it's other kids, other people's.
I think that's exactly right. And, you know, and I don't want to say that I don't think that some children do need extensive phonics instruction. You know, I used to be a resource reading teacher, and I know that is important. But every school should have a school library that's well resourced, and there's no reason why that these libraries have been closed, and also that librarians have lost their jobs, that art teachers, real art teachers, have lost their jobs. You know, every school should have the qualified teachers they need as well. And of course, that's a serious issue right now too, because with teachers leaving, they're, you know, bringing in anybody almost to teach. And
They are bringing in anybody.
That's right. And it was interesting, again, back at the in Houston, the superintendent came out and said, well, they have filled all the classrooms with a teacher, but, you know, people came back from the union there and said, wait a minute, you've maybe filled the classroom, but we're not assured who that is.
We're not a teacher. Yeah. In fact, well, I've seen that trick done again, you know, back, you know, where Anya is in Wisconsin. They tried doing that when I was there. You know, we'll call you a, you know, emergency licensed teacher. And I used to tell people, I'm like, beware if you get the announcement that your child's teacher is an emergency licensed teacher, because what emergency licensed teacher doesn't mean that person's not a great person who doesn't want to do great by your kid, but it means not a teacher. Okay. There is no such thing as emergency licensed, you know, fighter pilots, no emergency licensed brain surgeons. Okay. So when you hear emergency licensed teacher, no such thing. Speaking though, you made this part though, too, to reading, talking about that, you know, you know, we're back in another reading wars again. And you said, hey, look, I'm not about intensive phonics. Give us a little bit more on, you know, your concerns with, you know, reading instruction.
Well, again, with reading, my big concern is the push for very young children to be reading before they're maybe ready. A lot of children, you know, develop a little bit at different rates, and that's okay, you know.
Yeah.
But I think there's just this real fear, like we were talking about a little bit before, that if your child isn't reading by first grade, then they won't be reading by third grade, and then they're going to be retained. And, you know, so parents feel like if their child's not reading by kindergarten, then there's a problem. And so I fear that we have a lot of kids that are being identified as having reading problems who maybe haven't been given the chance to develop. And, you know, I know we need to watch children and make sure that they do have some of the signs that they're able to read. But I do feel like making reading into emergency can't be very, very enjoyable for children. Mm-hmm. And so that's a real concern for me right now. But I think the push down for expectations is happening in K through 12 across the board. I mean, in high school, I think, back to the workforce again, there are a lot of companies pushing for their programs to even be in the high school. And so, you know, high school kids should be allowed to develop also. Why do we have everybody force feeling like they have to take advanced placement, for example? Why do all kids feel like they have to take college in high school? I've never understood that, but that advanced placement is a privatized program. So,
yeah, that push, you're saying, it's like we're, you know, even the younger kids pushing younger kids to be, and then pushing older kids. And it's all, it feels like pushing them to be ready for the next thing, right? And we're talking about, you know, we've had some great guests and co-hosts on the show, Teacher Joanna and Teacher Hallie, you know, talking about, you know, social emotional regulation, and in fact how a lot of their job was essentially trying to help kids recognize, no, you know, learning how to be present. And you think about that, you're like, wait a minute, why would that be so hard? Well, just think what Nancy Bailey just put out there. When we're hitting three-year-olds with the intensity that you as a three-year-old are going to let us down if you're not reading by the time you're three and a half, is it any wonder that when we get to high school that we have to now teach kids to regulate themselves in the point of going, like, take your time, let go of that stress. Well, it's like, wait a minute, we've been programming them from the time they were, right? You know, the idea that we're now teaching mindfulness to high school kids, it's like, you know, well, of course we should be, but then how did it ever happen to turn out that way? You've got some other areas there too. Again, it's 10 years later, the continuing intentional unraveling of America's public schools. Speaking of teachers, you know, we were talking about it. The teacher shortage, is that our continuing fear, Nancy?
Well, you know, I think that when people talk about teacher shortages, I think we've been talking about this for so many years, but it's really, I think, teachers being driven out of their schools, you know, and certainly COVID. When you think about COVID and how teachers were just treated with such disrespect afterwards, that is just amazing to me, to see teachers and to hear teachers being blamed for school closures. Teachers don't have control over that. When I went to the doctor, I had to wear a mask. The doctors all demanded that for their offices, even longer than schools. And they would apologize and say, oh, we have to do this. So, you know, for teachers to be blamed, is that not an intentional thing to drive teachers out? Right. I don't feel like, I fear that the real drive right now in our schools truly is to replace teachers with tech. And, you know, maybe with COVID, it seemed like a lot of people thought that might happen, that parents might like it, but it backfired and they didn't like it. So,
yeah, I wonder if that actually kind of stalled that one out a little bit.
Yeah,
you know, it's right there. So nancybailey.com. Nancy, what else should people be looking for other than your website? Again, your books. Plug your books out there so that people can go out and grab them.
Well, I have Losing America's Schools, and I have to go and look up. And also, Misguided Education Reform is another. And of course, I was also honored to do a book, to co-author the book with Diane Ravitch on EdSpeak.
Right.
And so I'm proud of all three of those books. They were a lot of work.
Yeah.
But I enjoyed writing. And I, you know, I wish that the changes, the positive changes would happen in our schools, and we have to keep hoping. But right now isn't a good time for America, and I think our schools are really a reflection of that.
Our schools are a reflection of that, but the reality is our schools are the best hope for that change.
They really are.
It really is. Check it out, nancybailey.com, Nancy Bailey's education website. When we get back, Busted Pencils, producer Anya and Tim will break it down. Nancy Bailey, thanks for busting pencils.
Thank you. Take care.
Back after the break. You.
Hey, I'm ready. I gotta set up something for. I have two more shows tonight because of Labor
Day. Oh, I'm sorry. No.
children you reject and disregard. These aching cries come from the bottom of our hearts.
We are sometimes crying. Busted Pencils, fully leaded education talk. Educated educators talking education. Our guest was Dr. Nancy Bailey. Check out nancybailey.com, Nancy Bailey's education website. 10 years later, the continuing intentional unraveling of America's public schools. 10 years, you know, we even talked about this 40 years. Producer Anya, last week, though, you gave us the, you know, the younger person's perspective.
Yeah, I guess so.
Say, you know, younger, I'm not going to reveal how much younger, but
thank you.
You hear, you know, Johnny and I talk, you know, 40 years ago, 10 years ago, perspective, does this ring true that, like, I mean, what is your experience when you hear, you know, Dr. Nancy Bailey making the pitch for why the arts are important?
Yeah.
What does that say to you?
Yeah, so I'll put it in perspective. In this way, without revealing my age, like I entered the public school system in 2003, and I started teaching as a tutor in 2014. So, you know, I, as a student and also as a teacher, have been not around for a long time, but around for this very particular past decade of education and two decades of education for me. And it's hard. And she's right. Like we are, as a country, constantly defunding the arts. And when you talk about teaching mindfulness, it's like, you know, within the formula of public school, of which there are many criticisms to be made, of course, like we don't necessarily or shouldn't necessarily need like emotional regulation class. That's kind of what the arts were in many ways providing. It's the same thing with like, well, we need a logic and we need a reasoning class. And it's like, do you mean math, hon? Do you mean the classes we already have? Why not just, you know, get to the core of those topics and be like, oh, they were always serving a purpose. Like PE wasn't supposed to be about getting kids ripped. It was like, let's make sure they run at least a little bit during the day. And now it's something totally different, it seems. We've lost the plot.
Well, that's a great, you know, the arts, right? Phys ed, you know, the idea that we see these sometimes as, you know, essentially add-ons occasionally. And in fact, you know, I've written about this many, many times. The idea that we take first graders, and I put this out in a blog that I wrote last year for Diane Ravitch, a reality, you know, didn't reveal the teachers' names, but, you know, the idea that a teacher, and again, back to teachers quitting, but a teacher I had worked with who was quitting because she had had enough of taking her first graders and being required, the first graders who didn't do well on the morning literacy exercises had to then stay in for recess.
Yeah.
To do more literacy work.
Yeah.
And she was just like, Tim, I can't, I'm done.
Yeah.
It's your hands up on you.
Well, I'm giving you 5 minutes.
I'm giving you five minutes,
mister. Okay. But I also, you know, my first teaching job was an after school tutor. And what I wasn't told during the whole interview process, what I wasn't told until day one of teaching is, and I'm from Wausau, the literally 99% of the kids I was given, it's because English was not the language at home. And the language at home specifically was Hmong. And it's like this whole other issue where I'm like, well, yeah, they don't get the word problem. They're having trouble with the language. And sending them to me, a 15-year-old girl, for 30 minutes after school is not going to change that. I'm sorry. But
right.
How is this the only solution that was come up with at that time? That's the feeling, right? I'm glad I could be there, but I was not the trained person. When you talk about hiring anybody, I look back at how little training I had. I'm like, why was I here? Why did we do it this way?
Well, now you're getting into the qualifications of, who is that person? You're saying it's a tutor, but, you know, yeah, it's just like, okay, so, and again, extra work, you know, extra time. There's nothing wrong with, quote, tutoring people
to give
them some extra help. But when you start, you know, saying, you know, like, why, you know, I think about these first graders that the teacher I worked with at that time, who just, you know, every recess, in fact, the way she explained it to me, she was like, you know, those kids had pretty much just, you know, realized they're never going to go to recess.
No.
And so they had already assumed that they'll be in for recess.
And how demoralizing is that? And how does that motivate that kid to get better? Because when you're little, think about when you were little and everything was so big, getting recess taken away, just throw me in a pit of vipers, man. That
there
sounds
you go,
easier.
Right?
And then we wonder, like, why don't they want to learn? Well,
what? Well, and you sit there and go, and here's the, you know, recess is like this time wasted. No,
not.
It's actually part of the learning process.
Yes.
If you want, you need a break. You need an opportunity to let the mind go and to be out there. And in fact, recess is learning.
It is.
It's a whole new way for that time. And you just say, it's just like, no, we're going to take that away. Arts, that moment in time where the students get to transition and get to think differently, that's not extra time for, you know, something that, hey, if you, as long as you're reading and doing your math on time, we'll give you some time with art. It's like, no, in fact, if you're not doing your reading and math on time, give them more art. Because chances are, as Nancy Bailey pointed out, is that who are those kids? And most of the time, these are the kids that don't have the opportunity for, you know, quality play, that don't have the arts at home. And the fact that we're going to take those away while they're in school, no, kids need those. All kids need these. But kids coming from backgrounds where they don't have those, the idea that remediation of those kids requires they not get, think about that. Those kids do not get right there. You should then hear yourself and saying, oh, that doesn't make sense. Why would I say those kids do not get? Those kids get. They get art. They get music. They get recess. They get extended time to draw. They have books at home. They get libraries that are richly filled with books. They get all of those things. You know, Anya, right? It's just like, when we talk about this, it's like we can get really upset and down, as Nancy Bailey said. I frame this as going back. How about, though, we sit there and go, like, here's a positive campaign. All children, public schools, they get it. They get what they need.
Exactly.
They get what they deserve. Busted Pencils, fully vetted. See you next week.
Want more Busted Pencils? Follow us on Facebook and Twitter at Busted Pencils or log on to BustedPencils.com for blogs, podcasts, and more. Join us again next Tuesday for Busted Pencils on Devil Radio 92.7.
Working hard is a long-standing tradition in Wisconsin. Some of the first labor unions formed here because of it. This Labor Day, join Earl Ingram as he hosts a special The Earl Ingram Show live from 8 to 11 a.m. at Labor Fest in Milwaukee.
Many people don't work on Labor Day, and so all they know is it's a day off. As a person who spent 34 years in labor and was a union man, I know the value of that.
Earl and his guests will discuss how Wisconsin's labor-related legislation became a model for other states, along with what unions look like now.
I've seen us go from that 30% union membership to now in Wisconsin, somewhere around 12%.
A union-led parade meets up with festgoers on the Summerfest grounds at 11. Labor Fest is free and open to all. Join Earl Ingram live this Labor Day, Monday, September 4th, starting at 8 a.m. from Labor Fest in Milwaukee, only here on your local Civic Media radio station and the Civic Media app.